But our legend of the game is the legendary South African cricketer. We can cover off on a little bit of the cricket that's happening over there now. But he did have a season for South Australia. He was phenomenal in that one season in Australia. Averaged over 100 for the state and put some glorious innings together. And he's been good enough to join us on the line from South Africa. Good morning, Barry.
Good evening, good morning, whichever you want. It depends where you live. Exactly. But thanks for having me, guys.
We thank you for joining us. We do appreciate it. We're just waking up here to what sounds like it was a fantastic day's cricket over there. Can you give us an understanding of how things played out? A late fight back from the Australians, it would seem.
Yeah, it's an interesting stage. I think AB is obviously the key to what's going to happen. If he's in a scenario where he's batting with a tail, and if he decides to go on the attack and he has a little bit of luck, and South Africa get a lead of around 100 or 150, then it puts them in a really good position. So it's very important for Australia to try and limit the damage with AB by perhaps not giving him the strike or trying to attack the other end. So the first hour tomorrow is going to be vitally important for both sides. If Australia can limit the lead to 30 or 40, then it's a really interesting test match.
Yeah, Barry, look, thanks so much for joining us. It's a real honour to have you on our show. Barry, if I could put you in the captain spot, so to speak, overnight, which team or which captain would you prefer to be?
I think right now you'd prefer to be Faf because, you've obviously got a lead and you've got your premier batsman still at the crease. So you'd fancy your chances of getting a reasonably handy lead. And then if you bowl well in the second innings, I think, Australia's still struggling a little bit in the middle order. They haven't quite got it right. I mean, David Warner's, AB and David Warner are the two keys. If they get AB out quickly tomorrow, then Australia will, obviously be in a position to attack. And if South Africa have a handy lead and then get Warner out early, then that obviously puts them in the driving seat. So there's a lot of interesting scenarios around them. And the backup players are obviously very important as well. But I think those are the two key players over the next couple of games that could change the course of the test match. Mm-hmm.
Just on that, while we speak to AB de Villiers, how long do we expect to have him around? Over 100 test matches already for South Africa. He's had times where he's cut back on his schedule.
In test cricket, you mean?
Yes, to prolong his career. 34 years of age and, as you say, the premier batsman for South Africa. It's almost like one of those situations where it's a joy to have him and enjoy him while you can.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, the guys have got so many options now. You can be an independent contractor. I mean, Chris Gayle has proved that, and you can do the swings and roundabouts of the T20 and earn a very good living without having to play test cricket and having to put yourself through the routine of training every day, 5-day test matches, whatever it is. So it's an interesting scenario. I mean, he's still got an RPL contract. How hungry he is that's something only he could answer. I mean, he's got a very good bat contract for $3 million a year, so which requires all three formats. So that might be a little hook to keep him going for a while. But it must be hard, and it must be a big decision for him. He's got a family, and those are other considerations to take into account. We've had fellows like Brendan McCullum retiring because of that very fact. They've got a family and he doesn't want the swings and roundabouts of test cricket. It's a real challenge for the RCC in the years ahead to make test cricket more relevant.
On that very theme, Barry, you've one of the all-time great batsmen. You played only 4 test matches and you were born in an era that before ODIs were huge, before 2020. Do you sometimes wish you were born in a different era where players now, as you said, make so much money in various forms of the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different scenario. I mean, I went through Packer, so I was part of the scenario of, the coloured gear, the white ball, the drop-in wickets, the night cricket. That was all Kerry Packer's, the part of the series that we were involved in. So, I was the sort of forerunner of all of that. But, I mean, it would be nice, but if you keep looking back, that's the way you're going to go. You can't do it. You just got to enjoy watching the cricket that you see now. But But I do worry a little bit about Test cricket. I mean, that's very relevant for guys of my era, you know, the Greg Chappells, the Ian Chappells and people like that who played Test cricket and made it relevant. Mm. It's a little bit of a worry that it's become, you know, sort of WWE type cricket, which the kids are getting fed every day, and it's a worry to make Test cricket, which is the real challenge, relevant.
Mm. And unfortunately, a lot of the talk prior to this Test match, during the course of this Test match, is the way that the two teams are interacting. What have you made of the relationship between the two sides and the impact it has on the interest in the game itself?
Yeah, I mean, that's been disappointing. I think the players are on reflection, you know, given the fact that maybe in a week's time when they've had it's all settled down and they can look back again and say, we didn't do a great job for cricket. We didn't promote the game as we should have. And I think they realise that. I mean, one of the big things that I was brought up, and then all the fellows of my era, and perhaps just a little bit after my era, was respect for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes appears to go out the window. I know there's a lot of intrusion with television cameras, and they're all over the place, and that's something I don't like, because there were a few altercations in my time, but there were no TV cameras, so no one knew about it. And
yeah.
You'd wake up the next morning and say, what an idiot I was. And perhaps Warner and De Kock are doing exactly that, saying, what an idiot I was. But it's too late. It's all over social media, and it doesn't reflect well on the game. So, you know, the guys are going to just have to cop it, because if you're earning that much money, there's strings attached, and you've got to make sure that you pull the right ones.
Mm. Yeah, Barry, looking back on your career now, if we can, and as I mentioned earlier, just those four Test matches against Australia in that 69-70 summer, which is quite famous. I think it's the only time Australia's ever been whitewashed in a Test series, and 200s and 250s from a young Barry Richards. What was Test cricket like, and was that little taste that you had, do you ever regret not being able to play more Test cricket?
Well, obviously, I mean, that's the pinnacle of what you play the game for, is to represent your country and play as many Test matches as you can. I mean, it obviously was frustrating, because, you know, it's probably a little bit worse for me, because I would go to Hampshire and play with Andy Roberts and Gordon Greenidge, and both of whom played pretty much 100 Test matches. So, you know, there was another little hook in the whole thing from our point of view. But, you know, it was part of what was happening at the time, and it was probably good from a South African point of view that we were isolated, because it turned the country around. But, you know, it's going to be one of those things in your life where it's a little bit of a regret. But I guess everybody that's played the game and will have regrets, and that's one of them.
Mm. A little bit closer to home for us, 1970-71, you played for South Australia. How ordinary was the bowling of Dennis Lilly, Graham McKenzie, Tony Lock and Tony Mann when you scored that 325 in the one day?
I mean, every squirrel, even a blind one, picks up an acorn every now and again. That was one of the days where, you know, everything went right. And I suppose you dream, when you play cricket, you dream about a day like that where, you know, everything came out the middle of the bat, you just played well, you're seeing the ball well, and everything went right. And I regret that it wasn't a six-hour day. I might have knocked off Ponsford. He's got the record for the highest number of runs in the day, but his was a six-hour day and mine was 5.5.
That's right.
So I don't know what. Perhaps Bradman organised that. So that's it.
Well, I think Barry Ian Chappell's at the other end for most, if not that entire day, and we've had him on this legend spot previously, and he's described your innings that day as the finest batting he's ever seen. Was you just mentioned one of those days when everything just went right for you, Barry. I bet you'd love to have to pocket that time in your career and reproduce it whenever you wanted to, I suppose.
Yeah, it would be nice. unfortunately, cricket's not like that. There are other days when you can't find the middle of the bat, and it's a bit of a struggle, and I guess anybody that's played cricket would realise that. And I think that's probably one of the things that's most satisfying is when you're actually not playing well and you can still fashion out a score, and people respect you for being tough to get out and tough to be as an opponent. It's not always the days where everything goes right. It's the days when it's not going right, but you still manage to fashion out a score. And I think probably Alan Border was one of the best at that. You know, you always think, well, you know, this guy's not playing terribly well. It won't be long. And then he's got 25, and then he's got 42, and then he's got 62, and you can't get him out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think those are the sort of days which give you a little bit of satisfaction because you become a respected opponent.
Mm. You mentioned earlier the World Series cricket time. Was that the time, because of your lack of test matches and because of the exclusion of South Africa, that you were able to enjoy time as an international cricketer, as an elite player? And what did you learn from those other players that you rarely got to play against at that level?
I learned that facing four West Indian fast bowlers was not an easy job. And I often talked to Greg Chappell about it. I said, "Gee, I'm glad we didn't have to cope with that, because it was pretty awesome to have that sort of firepower. You know, you have one guy bowling seven overs, one guy bowling six. That's 13 overs. So that's the first hour done and dusted. The next guys come along and they do exactly the same thing. And then it's lunchtime, and the two guys that started off have had an hour plus lunch to have a rest, and they do it all again for the afternoon.
Yeah.
So it was a tough old period for batsmen in that era. The fact that we enjoyed World Series cricket, I think we all got on pretty well, but it was very tough cricket. I don't think I've played tougher cricket, and I think I've spoken to guys like Greg and Viv Richards and people like that and Imran, who said that's the hardest cricket they played. And for the RCC to not recognise it as even first class is a joke when you watch Zimbabwe playing Bangladesh.
Yeah, surely that has to change, Barry, because I was only a kid. I'm a little bit older than Jimmy, and I can remember World Series cricket. It was just an extraordinary summer. As a player, though, did you get the feeling that you were literally changing cricket?
I think, obviously the things that were the innovations that Kerry sought for that time was people, I think, from the Australian Cricket Board said, you know, that's why they try to give it the name circus, because Kerry was trying to reinvent the game, and things that he was red hot on was, you know, they called it a circus, but nothing could have been further from the truth. He said, if I find any collusion from you guys, because there was a winner-take-all scenario. Kerry was very strong on that. He said, whoever wins the game wins the money. If you guys go behind my back and start splitting the money and I find out, you'll all get the sack. And if anybody who knows Packer was not prepared to cross him. So everybody played for the case of wanting the pub to win.
Yep.
But you also knew that you had to, if you wanted to make any money or decent money, you had to win as well. So it was, you know, balls out. Everybody had a full go at everything. And for people to say that there was collusion, they certainly didn't tell me.
How much of an influential figure was he? You know, they make miniseries now, Barry, about the influence that Kerry Packer had at that time. How much of and how often would he have contact with the players?
He quite regularly, more so with the Australian players who knew better than you know, guys like us or, you know, the overseas players. But he used to turn up at practice every now and again. We used to crap ourselves a little bit, because he used to like to have a little bit of fielding practice in the slips, but we realised he wasn't the most coordinated person of all time, so we didn't want to hit him in the chops. So we used to make sure that we nicked him, that it went over his head, and just said, "Oh, bad luck, here we have it next time."
But
he was an awesome man. He really was. I mean, a lot of people give him a lot of flack in Australia, but if he shook your hand and said, "That's the deal," that was the deal. He was true to his word and everything that he said.
Barry, this is probably an impossible question to answer, because we're talking about World Series cricket. You're talking about the absolute elite players, some of the all-time greats of the game, playing at the peak of their powers. But Barry Richards, what was the best bowler you faced and the best batsman you played against?
Oh, always a tough one to answer. I mean, I'd like a dollar for every time I've been asked that question. I wouldn't have to bother about working anymore. It's conditions under which you play. You know, scenarios, wet wickets. Mm. Derek Underwood were very, very tough. You played at the Wacker in the old days where it bounced. You know, Tomo or Lily or Michael Holding or Joel Garner. It's very hard to put a finger on say who's the best player. Mm. You know, is Coley better than Ndulka? You know, if he is, it's marginal, and you'll get 50 people. 25 will say Tendulkar, 25 will say Coley. So yeah. The scenario of a great player is that he's a great player. I mean, Gary Sobers is an all-time best all-rounder, but is he better than Jacques Collis? These figures might suggest that he's not, but he played in a different era. He had no protective gear. He had sometimes uncovered wickets. So it's very hard to put a finger on and say that's the best of all time. It's the only one that really stands out for me is Bradman. He was twice as good as the next bloke in his in his era, and no one that I know of has done that. Mm. You know, Tendulkar, Lara, Ponting, Callis, they'll all be about the same.
Yeah,
within one or two of each other. But Bradman was twice as good as the next guy. I mean, that's an awesome stat in my mind.
Yeah,
phenomenal.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about cricket as it is today. What's your hopes? What are your fears for cricket moving forward?
My fear is Test cricket, and to make it relevant. I mean, one of the problems is you've got a two distinct divisions of cricket, everybody says, well, why don't you have two divisions of Test cricket? Well, then it's not Test cricket. Test cricket is the ultimate, and that's what you want it to be. And that's the challenge for the RCC is to make the bottom teams relevant, the Zimbabwes and the Bangladeshis. How do you give them a leg up to make sure that every Test match has a context? That's what I'd like to see. I mean, whether it's going to happen or not is difficult because, you know, T20 has become, something which has expanded, beyond just the cricket lover. It's families and young kids, and they can go for a short period of time and be entertained. But, you know, I look on T20 as an entertainment. It's something that you go to be entertained. No one really remembers the result in a week's time. Mm. But Test cricket is relevant. And to try and make that more relevant and more popular is going to be the challenge that the RCC is going to have over the next 10 years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Barry, time's beating us, but could I put you on the spot? Australia are leading 1-0. South Africa perhaps have the advantage going to day three of the second test. Who wins this series, Barry?
I tell you what, if I bet 365, would have my money if I knew for sure, but my money is in my pocket because these two teams are so even that it's very, very hard to call a winner in this Test series. Yeah. I think it's going to be a little bit of luck at the right time, which we'll see one side come out on top, but to call it is very difficult. They're very evenly matched, and it's going to be a good series.
Great cricket.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We're so fantastic that we've been able to speak to you, Barry. We do appreciate it. A little walk down memory lane to have a look at what an absolutely outstanding career, and of course to have a look at this current Test series between Australia and South Africa. We really appreciate your time this evening, and great to have you on the program, Barry.
Thanks, guys. Good luck and enjoy the series.
Thanks so much, Barry.
There he is, the outstanding cricketer, outstanding commentator too, Barry Richards.
The legend himself, yeah.